a steel rod down her back strapped to her shoulders and waist. When she was 18, she was taken on a grand tour by her parents in their yacht, Alva, where they visited Europe, Russia, and India. While she enjoyed the sights with her younger brother, Willie, her mother was plotting her future. She was determined that her daughter should marry an Englishman. Consuelo, at the time, was in love with a suitor from Newport in America, but her mother had other ideas. Alva decided that the Duke of Marlborough would fit the bill, and, as he was looking for a rich American heiress, it seemed to be a good arrangement for everyone, except, of course, Consuelo. Having settled on an English duke, Alva set about arranging the marriage, much to Consuelo's misery. Consuelo married her duke and moved to Blenheim Palace, where she was intensely lonely and everything seemed strange. She produced two sons in quick succession, John and Ivor. But the marriage was not happy, and soon both were looking elsewhere for companionship. Consuelo almost caused a scandal. She had determined to run off with a lover. But Winston Churchill, her close friend and ally, and her husband's first cousin, stepped in and persuaded her to do no such thing. He enlisted the support of her father, who organized an orderly separation and built her a house in London. In this next phase of her life, she threw herself into public work, was elected to the London County Council, and became a suffragette. Eventually, she was granted a divorce and was able to marry the love of her life, a charming French airman who had, apparently, set eyes on her many years earlier when she was on her grand tour in Paris and had told his mother he was going to marry her. They moved to France, entertained lavishly, and cultivated painters and writers, setting up a school near Paris on their property, Saint-Georges Motel. They also bought a spectacular house in the south of France at Aix. They managed, with great difficulty, to escape from France after the German invasion, and they resettled in the United States. My sisters and I were very spoilt by both of them. Jacques regularly took Mimi and me to Le Pavillon for lunch, where the famous chef, Henri Soule, would make pomme soufflé for us. Granny was always invariably soignée and beautifully dressed, and always saw that we were well-dressed, too. She included us in many of her grown-up lunches, where we were made to sit ramrod straight in itchy organdy dresses talking to famous men from the worlds of business, letters, and politics. It must have been most unusual and deadly boring for them. Granny was always positive and active, regularly remodeling her houses, and indeed ours in Southampton. She stayed young by being curious and interested in everything new. Were she alive today, she would, I am sure, have been computer literate. She would have found modern technology fascinating. Her deafness might have held her back with mobile phones, but she would have taken to texting, which her beautiful manicured hands would have found easy. She lived through the extraordinary events and changes of the 20th century with balance and enthusiasm. I never heard her complain. She was never negative or cross. She knew how to have fun and managed to live her life with great dignity and elegance. She gave great pleasure to many people, and all her family loved and respected her. Serena Russell Balfour, 2011. Foreword. Friends have often told me that I should write my story and describe the world of my youth, which was so different from that of today. There are no journals to help me. There are but the meager notes of engagements made, the press cuttings of recorded events. But the portraits of my friends are etched in memory and stand like figures in a Paul Veronese, brilliant and festive against backgrounds of space and color where architectural pleasances and an ordered courtesy add beauty to the zest for life. Looking back to 1895, when I married the 9th Duke of Marlborough and went to live in England, I recall a society whose conventions were closer to the 18th than to the 20th century. Queen Victoria's reign was nearing its end. But those who, like myself, witnessed the splendid pageant of her Diamond Jubilee could not have foreseen that her death would close an era. There are few of us left who can recall that world with its complete acceptance of aristocratic privileges. There are still fewer to whom such anachronisms remain justified. Even then, whispered doubts of their rightfulness could be heard. So is it surprising that an American girl who held democratic views found it difficult to accept the assumption that birth alone confers superiority? Is it not natural when my marriage foundered and I was able to lead my life in the comparative freedom a legal separation ensures, that influenced by the more liberal doctrines of the 20th century, I should, in the English tradition, have sought a greater usefulness in social service? Years later, when divorce brought complete freedom, I found happiness in marriage with Jacques Balzan,